Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. CraftBeer.com presents live from the Great American Beer Festival. Unparalleled pairing, beer, cheese, and the confluence of flavor, featuring Greg Engert of Birch and Barley and the Church Key in Washington, D.C. Good evening, everyone. I'm Carolyn Smigalski, the Beer Fox, the editor of Beer and Brewing at BellaOnline.com. And I'm here on behalf of the Brewers Association, which is the trade association for craft brewers nationwide. The Brewers Association also presents craftbeer.com. There's a great exhibit right outside here. The World Beer Cup and Savor, an American craft beer and food experience in Washington, D.C. Have you been there? Awesome. This is the 29th annual Great American Beer Festival, where 2,200 beers are out there on the floor for you. This entire event sold out 5 weeks in advance, so those of you who are lucky enough to be here are the rock star fans of craft beer. Give yourselves a hand. Podcasts of these presentations will be available at craftbeer.com. As beer director of the Neighborhood Restaurant Group, our guest has become one of the most influential people in the beer world today, presiding over the beer program for 8 restaurants and Planet Wine. To him, craft beer is serious business. He helped open the Church Key in the nation's capital, featuring 555 beers. And then through his efforts into Birch and Barley, where he works with executive chef Kyle Bailey to orchestrate beer and food pairings in this white hot restaurant. Birch and Barley guests offers guests over 500 beers, 50 taps, and 5 cask conditioned ales. And he's here to share his dynamic knowledge with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from Birch and Barley, Greg Engert.
Hello. Wow, this is awesome. I'd like to thank everybody for coming to this. At first, I picked this time because, I don't know, I thought it'd be cool to be 8:30 on a Friday, but if I were you, I would probably just be drinking right now. So I'm glad you all came in. For this, I'm going to talk briefly just about some ideas I have on beer and cheese and beer and food generally, and then we're going to start sending it out. There'll be 4 different cheeses with 4 different beers, and I'll talk about them as they come up. The really cool thing for me is that in this past week, I literally had a kind of revelation when it came to beer and food versus wine and food. And it came from my girlfriend, of all people, who said, there's a question that nobody's ever asked you that I think that you wouldn't have a good answer for. And that's, why are people pairing beer with food at this level in 2010 rather than 2 years ago? Why am I able to have a restaurant that does a tasting menu nightly? I was actually invited out to Napa recently with Food and Wine as one of the top sommeliers in the country, and the first one with beer. So why is it that today people are willing to think about beer and food together? And I think that I finally understand it, and it has a lot to do with the changes in cuisine in the U.S. in the past 30 years or so. So I think we all know that beer and wine do different things with food. I'm not one of those people that thinks that beer is better than wine. I think that they literally just interact differently with food across the board. So if you think about it, it has to do with what they are at their core. So wine is a fruit-based beverage that is acidic. Acidity is the major taste profile you find with wine. So whenever you're talking about pairing wine with food, you have to talk about acidity and how it's going to interact. Beer, on the other hand, is grain-based, and it's sugared, it's sweet, and you have to figure out how sweetness is going to interact with food. So when you sit down to taste these two very different beverages with food, you realize right away that one beverage, beer, complements the food. There are more sweet, I'm thinking like protein, fat, butter, richness. There's more sweet flavors in food than there are naturally acidic flavors in the food that we eat. They surface and manifest themselves in sweet ways, foods do, across the board, way more. So when we think about beer with food, we're thinking about a sort of complement. Okay, people have talked about this for years. Wine, on the other hand, with acidity, if you ever sit down and talk about wine and food, how they work together, you realize very early on that you're trying to figure out a way that the wine doesn't get too sour with the food. If you sit down with the five major flavors, I'm talking about taste right now, aroma comes later, but if you eat something sour with wine, it's good. They both mellow out. If you eat something like umami, like miso with wine, they both kind of mellow out. This goes across the board until you get to sweetness. I did a seminar with Jerry Comfort, who's a wine educator in Napa, and if you bite an apple and eat and take a sip of wine, it gets really sour. So you find out that sweetness across the board is very difficult with wine due to what it does to acidity, but also it dries out wine. Things that are tannic get more tannic in the presence of sweetness. So it's really interesting to think of it that way. When you taste wine and food, you're trying to just make sure that neither kind of get in each other's way and that they kind of coexist. When it comes to beer, on the other hand, you've got that richness, that sweetness. Grains, barley, wheat, anything that you try to malt, they're really possessive. They don't give us too much. They always keep a little for themselves. So when we make beer, there's always residual sweetness. And this residual sweetness is going to find a natural complement in all foods that we eat. There's always going to be some sweetness in our food, and there's always going to be some sweetness in our beer. So if you think about cuisine generally, wine, to me, is a kind of added ingredient. It's an extra sauce, accoutrement to the dish that you're eating, and it works really well. It's great. And it works especially well with very, very complex foods like French cuisine that's really worked. They're just working ingredients. It's so technical. There's so much going on that wine is just another flavor in the mix. And it's wonderful. And that's why I think wine worked for so, so long. But in the past 15, 20 years, well, actually going all the way back to Alice Walker and, you know, Chez Panisse, it became less about this, like, cookery and more about ripping ingredients out of the ground and maintaining and accentuating their flavors rather than getting too into, like, you know, playing around with them and manipulating them. The flavors were so good, they needed not being manipulated. And a chef's talent was in his or her kind of restraint. So I think that when this started happening, now you had flavor forward. And my chef, Kyle Bailey, who's in the back right now preparing these cheeses for you, the food that he makes is suited to beer. If you take beer to a really, really intensely complex French dish, it's fine, it works, but it kind of gets crowded out. If you take beer to a flavor-forward, ingredient-driven dish, the beer gets in there and literally accentuates the flavors that the chef wants. I look at it like you have these big, bold flavors, and when they bring it to the table, then we pour you some great beer. That beer gets in there and furthers the goal of accenting ingredients. And that's what I think beer can do, because beer is complementing in such a way. The bubbles get in there, they force the food, they kind of chew the food, bring it into the beer's sweetness, the grain flavors, the roast, the caramel, the toast, and this gets like just takes off. And so I think the idea of contemporary cuisine is simplicity, and I think that beer executes that for us in complementing the flavors. So the first beer that we're pouring tonight is amazing Belgian wheat beer style from the brewery in Southern California. I have this awesome flavor profile chart. We at Birch & Barley in Churchkin, D.C., we break down beers not by style or by region, but by flavor. So we have 7 flavors that everything fits into, broadly speaking. Crisp, hop, malt, roast, smoke, fruity, spicy, and tart and funky. I find that we can fit a beer in everywhere. We can fit a beer in any of those categories. This is really great for food because it breaks it down. It makes people start thinking about flavor simply, and then we can link up. So Patrick Rue from the brewery actually came to my restaurant for Savor this year. He loved the category so much that he's actually going to use these categories at the cheese shop he's opening up right nearby the brewery coming up pretty soon here. And so it's pretty cool. So I had to use some of his beers. And this beer is wonderful. Now, the first thing, the first cheese we're doing, this is a wonderful camembert from Old Chatham Shepherding Company in upstate New York. Okay, this is Nancy's camembert, named after one of the owners. It's a cool camembert because it's both cow and sheep's milk. So it's got some of that earthy, kind of grassy flavors from sheep's milk, a little bit of tang, but the creaminess of the cow kind of mellows it out a little bit. So from my previous thing about how beer works for the cuisine of today, because it's just flavor forward, simple ingredients that are really excellent, not too much fuss or cookery on the part of the chef, what better than cheese to emphasize that point? And you'll see we do have some accoutrement here as well for you that my chef, Kyle, made up for us in the back. But it's so funny because, you know, there's that old English wine merchant adage that goes, buy on an apple and sell on cheese. And basically it means that, like I talked about earlier, if you can taste a wine and it's pretty good in the presence of an apple's bite, you know it's going to stand up to a lot of things. If you want to sell shitty wine to an unknowing consumer, you do it with cheese. And it's so because cheese is fatty, it's rich, it's buttery, it's protein-laden, all things that match up with the sweetness, the residual sweetness we find in beer, the grainy flavors, of course. But also, it sticks to your mouth. It makes bad wine taste good. It makes shitty wine taste fruity at mass imperfections. Okay, that's why I serve it at, you know, house parties in Williamsburg or something. Yeah. So it's like, oh, check out this awesome wine with this awesome cheese. They both are bad, but it goes great together. Beer can't hide behind that, which can be tough, but luckily beer mimics these flavors. It complements the flavors so well. So with the Orchard White, this is actually a wheat beer that uses malted wheat and oats. So it's got a little bit more of a silky texture. I love that with the creamy nature of the cheese. The big thing for me in cheese is that when I start thinking about how to pair, I think about process. Okay? So it's very basic. Cheese is made just like beer. Or at least the end results are just like beer. So when I think of all the ways that we can evaporate moisture during the cheese-making process, so setting at higher temperatures, cutting more, pressing harder on the cheese, these are ways that you give the cheese more body, you give it more richness, and you demand a richer beer. Okay? Cheese goes through always at least one fermentation, and most of the time two. This one's got two. The way that cheese gets started is a culture that so often includes lactobacillus, which we're all familiar with. We use that a lot in our beers these days. And this lactic acidity stays through pretty much to the end in all. This is what gives you the pH to allow the rennet, the enzymes, to start breaking it down, to start clumping the casein proteins, right? So you've already started fermentation. If that's all it is, like in the next cheese, I would stay away from really big, aromatically yeast-driven beers. But in the case of the Nancy's Camembert, it's been inoculated secondarily during the ripening process, right? With a culture that gives it that beautiful, edible, bloomy rind, and a lot more kind of fermentation flavor, a little bit of funk, a little bit of earth, a little bit of spice. I think of it this way. If this was just a chèvre or something that just had that kind of initial fermentation served fresh, maybe I do a Belgian blonde, something kind of fruity, spicy in the nose from the yeast, but nothing too intense. This beer is a little bit richer, and it's got orange peel. It's got coriander and lavender added to it. So in this, I look at it as like two fermentations, extra aromatics. We're going to want to do yeast-driven flavors, that kind of general floral, yeasty, bright fruit and spice, but then the citrus, the coriander spice, as well as the lavender for that grassy floral character. And like I said, this is a good portion of sheep's milk, so that kind of earthy sheep quality is awesome with lavender. I think it picks it up really well. And you'll notice they make these in big discs so that the exterior, the bloomy rind fermentation occurs unevenly, and that's why it's kind of creamy and runny and so great with this. If you have this with wine, it sticks to the mouth really, really intensely. It's a really sticky cheese. This carbonation, bottle conditioned, creamy, and yet effervescent at the same time. So not going to wash it all away, but it's going to get rid of it a little bit. Okay. Okay, so the second course is coming out right now. I also meant to mention on that first one, you notice our accoutrement that Kyle made for us back there? That was a really wonderful peach marmalade. So think peach, you're pulling out that citrus from the orange peel and as well as that kind of bright fruit from the yeast. But also, as marmalade, you have great kind of brown sugar action going on. Again, sweetness. When you think about wine, if I'm going to have that Nancy's Camembert with some wine, I think that the wine, again, it exists as kind of like a very kind of cordial partner to the cheese. It's very nice. It stands next to it as a kind of accoutrement. When we do beer, we can have the cheese and the accoutrement. And the beer is kind of the bridge between the two. So everything can come together in one bite. It's awesome. It's really cool. So the next thing that we're sending out, the cheese first on this one. Or maybe not. I don't know. The cheese coming out is the Tillamook 3-year-old vintage white cheddar from Oregon. These guys have been making cheese since 1909. They're Swiss. They wanted to make Swiss cheese, Swiss-style mountain cheeses, but it didn't work in that like rainy, humid climate of southern Oregon. So they moved over to cheddar, and they make amazing cheddars. This is the point, though, where I have to kind of be a little difficult with beer because I'm still seeing people that claim that spicy food goes with hoppy beers, and I've tried it a million times, and I want to believe it. But overall, what I've found, and this is kind of anathema, I think, to many people who are beer people, but I've learned a lot about what beer can do with food by tasting, but also by studying wine. There's far more written about how wine interacts with food. There's far more analysis, chemically, scientifically, than there is in beer yet, which is cool. We're getting there. But at the end of the day, I'm realizing more and more that hops, especially big, brash American hops, act very similarly to tannins in wine. I know tannins aren't bitter. They're kind of drying and astringent, but they chemically kind of react similarly with food. Okay? And I find it very difficult to pair bitterness across the board. So even though I think beer is amazing with food, generally speaking, things that are a little more rich in malt character, things that are not quite as bitter tend to work across the board better. And that's the same thing with wine as well. You know, really tannic reds are tough unless you're doing it with really fatty, protein-laden foods. And only then, chemically, can those really rich proteins literally latch on to the tannins and sweep them away. And that's why tannin, everybody always says cut. I don't really get that as much because I don't think that tannins cut into steak. I think that they both mellow together, and I think hops do the same. So we'll talk more about this later when we get to the blue cheese because I don't think that hoppy beers go with blue cheese as well as others. But what hoppy beers do go great with are really rich protein-laden foods and really hard cheeses, really awesome hard cheddars. These are things that can really deal with the hoppiness. And just like with wine, we have to worry about what happens with our taste before we worry about aroma. So if you eat some cheese and that bitterness stays on the palate, doesn't matter how great it smells, it's still too bitter for the palate. So we don't want to overwhelm it. Now, hard cheeses are awesome because every step of the way, we're using more heat. We're pressing harder. This cheddar's been milled to make sure that we can get all the way out of it we can. And then, just for kicks, we're aging this thing for 3 years to further crystallize the proteins. And then these proteins meet up with these essential hop oils, but also the alpha acid oils. This is when you're going to get a dragging away of the bitterness, and they both mellow in the presence of each other. When that happens, the sweeter, kind of caramelly, buttery nature of the cheese, a little bit of fruit, can step out, because cheddars have great fruit underneath to meet up just both with the malt, but also with the hop aromatics. So I think that's how I look at that. And then the accoutrement here is some pine nut butter. Butter, because beer is sweet. It's great. Always awesome with butter. And then pine nuts make me think, you know, Maharaja, especially, I love it. Once you taste it with this, you realize how much of a malt-based Maharaja really has. It's not just a hop bomb across the board. It's not super lean on the palate. And when you kind of knock back that hop bitterness, you let these malt character kind of step up, and that's where you can hit the cheese, hit the bread, of course, but also hit some of that butteriness of the pine nuts. And pine nuts, nuttiness, malt character is great. And then I think pine, I think Simcoe, and Simcoe is in the Maharaja as well. And Chinook, too. I love the Chinook hop. It's very herbal, a little bit of smokiness to it. Okay, so earlier I talked about fermentations. The next cheese coming out is actually from Colorado. It's a Haystack Sunlight cheese, awesome goat's milk cheese that has a wash rind. So two things going on here are different than the first two. This cheese is semi-firm, so it's had work done to it that's been pressed more than the first, but not as much as the second. You know, it's kind of somewhere in between, closer to the cheddar's firmness and hardness than it was to the first cheeses. So you have a little bit more richness. So I think we're ready to have something with this that has a touch of dry bitterness, but I wouldn't bring like a big IPA to it because of the back end. When you taste this cheese, it's a wash rind. It's kind of mellow at first, but then it gets dry, and then it gets funky in the back, the retronasal passage, which is in the backside of your smell there. We say 99% of taste or flavor, I say, is aroma, but you smell. But as you eat, so you wonder why wine people, and I do this too, even with beer, like, you know, do that like gurgling thing where you keep your mouth open, like that, you know, you're pulling air in and it's pushing the aromas that are still latent in the food up your back retronasal, and you can still smell it while you taste it. And on the back end of this cheese, you get some big funk, some big like, kind of funkiness. So I want something that's got a little bit of richness, more malt to it. I think the harder cheese gets, the more malt character you want. It makes sense like that. But also, this is wash rind. The first one was bloomy. This has got more going on aromatically. So we're going to bring you another brewery beer. It's called Saison Roux. And this one is brewed with a little bit of rye malt, which is awesome because it gives it a kind of spiciness, but also a grainy texture. I think it makes it a little drier, along with the American hop presence. It works better with that kind of firm and hard nature, mild sharpness of this cheese. But now we have that first fermentation from a Saison yeast. And in the bottle, we spike it with Brettanomyces, which is going to give it a little bit of that earthy funk, right? Little leather, little strawberry, tutti frutti. It depends on the age of the bottle. But this is why I don't really love hoppy beers with this, because I love the touch of hops to deal with that sharpness. And then at retro, that back-ended funk picks up and pulls the Brett out of the beer. It really meets up nicely. So whenever I think of like wash rind cheeses, that extra addition, you know, wash rind is like, it's, you know, it's not just more fermentation. It's encouraging it. It's feeding it. It's washing it with something that it can consume to make flavor. In carbon dioxide, there's little bubbles in your cheese. That's from the CO2 that's being made. And the last cheese that's coming out deliberately has oxygen added to it. We'll talk about that when it gets out. So the fun thing for me about this is that this isn't just a random guy from D.C. talking about beer and cheese. Washington, D.C. has cheese programs that's been going on since the 1960s. In fact, it's funny. When John F. Kennedy took office, he brought in a French chef, and the White House dinners became French. And so kind of like today, you know, everybody went crazy about that president. And French restaurants took over Washington, D.C. And with them came their cheese courses and things like that. So there's a big, deep history of French food, complicated food, wine food, and cheese in Washington, D.C. that continued. Even as the rest of the country was waking up to, like, ingredient-driven freshness in the 70s and 80s, D.C. kind of stayed stodgy and very, antiquated. And then in the 1980s, even as French restaurants were starting to go away, the health scare, everybody was scared about fat content, and cheese was suddenly anathema to many people. So the cheese courses got pulled off these menus. And when it resurfaced in the 90s and then in the 2000s, it resurfaced to find a ton of great young chefs making ingredient-driven food. So you see cheese boards on all sorts of menus now. It's not just for the French anymore. And again, to me, that makes a lot of sense, because if you talk about beer being great with flavor-driven, ingredient-driven food, three cheeses with a little accoutrement and some bread, you can't get any more like just ingredient-driven than that. There's no fuss here. Interestingly, though, it's kind of a paradox, you know, because beer is actually more complicated to make than wine. Isn't it funny how I'm saying that beer works for these kind of really ingredient-driven, less fussy foods, but it's a fussier beverage to produce. I said that to a wine person before, and then they're like, well, then that makes no sense. I'm like, well, no, it does make sense, because I could fall back on the point that beer is cooked. It's a brewer is a chef. You start out, well, the maltster starts out like almost on the grill station, you know? So he's caramelizing your meat, your grain. He's toasting it. He's making it toffee-ish. Then he ships it over, and then you start seasoning it. That's when the hops come in, or the lavender, or the grains of paradise, whatever. And then you ferment it, and then you age and things like that. So I think it's cool, because I think beer is kind of a dish in and of itself, so it's ready to join up with a dish that's kind of like simpler, just more ingredient-driven, whereas wine is so like not fussy to make. It's all about this one ingredient, and it's one ingredient that you add to 25 ingredients on that really pretty plate of food that you get. Okay. Did everybody get the Saison Roux? Okay. Okay, we can do the next one. I'm ready for that. So this is one, the next one we're doing, I have to include a blue cheese because they're so awesome. Also because this one's from Rogue. Well, Creamery, Oregon Blue, 1935. This is when they started making cheese out there. And we're doing it with one of my favorite Avery beers, the Reverend. Big, huge quad, real malty. Got a nice caramel malt sweetness to it. Great spices in the back end, which is why I like it with blue cheese mostly, but I'll get to that in a second. This is the best thing I heard recently from a wine person is like, one thing I got to give wine credit for is with acidity is that it mellows salt, and those really complicated culinary dishes tend to be heavily laden with salt. So the mellowing of salt also mellows acidity, and it really is great. Like wine, acidic wine with saltier, brinier foods is wonderful. However, you notice that blue cheese is salty, right? Really salty, and yet we tend to pair sweet wines with it. And so if you ask somebody about why is that, they say, oh, well, acid's good with salt to a point, and it gets too salty, and then you have to bring out the sweetness, which is funny to me because, you know, that's just they're saying, well, we can just bring beer out for it. Also, it's too rich, they say. It overwhelms a lot of the delicate wine flavors, the dryness of the wine. So when I look at tasting menus, when my friends, or when I do wine tasting menus, I notice that at least if you got five courses, one course is a sparkling wine for sure. Every single time, first course, sparkle. Second course is a sweet Riesling or something like that. Maybe a semi-dry Gewürztraminer, something like that. And then the final course is a dessert wine that's sweet. So three out of five are sweet or bubbly, which is what all beers are in some respects. So it's interesting when you talk about that, because when you do that now, if sweet and bubbly works with most everything, now we can really hone in on flavors, right? So now on the flip side of that, though, bitterness can be difficult, not just from the hop side, but also from the roast side. A lot of people love Imperial IPAs with blue cheeses. A lot of people love Imperial Stouts with blue cheeses. It's subjective, of course. But for me, I just think that the bitterness from the roast and the hop stays on the palate too long. And this is, it's rich, but it's creamy. It dissipates on the palate pretty quickly and goes away, and I'm left with bitterness. I actually just prove it to myself again earlier. I did it with Maharaja before we started. And it was great. The aromas, the secondary things go really great together. But texturally, it's too bitter. It's too bitter for me. With the Reverend, I think there's a hint of roast, but nothing too incredibly intense about it. But that malty sweetness, just taking a lesson from the wine people, is great to knock out that, to deal well with that salt, that big salt. And then you have, you know, blue cheeses underneath it all. You get past the blue vein, you know, that injected mold and the injected oxygen that feeds that mold. And the flavors, that gives you kind of like minty, clean spiciness, herbal quality. There's lots of raisin and toffee and caramel going on here. So I look to that. I love concentrating on that and pulling that out of the cheese and doing it with the Reverend, that maltiness of the Reverend as well. And then on the back end, I feel like Reverend's got a great kind of residual spice to it. That's also with that blue vein or green vein probably in this cheese. So I think that's my time. So it's cool. Does anybody have any questions? I probably can't hear you anyway, so we can skip that if you want. I know I was very thorough, so you didn't have it. Cool. Well, thank you all for coming. This is awesome. Thank you very much. And yeah. Oh, yeah. Hold on. There's one question. I can't hear you. No, Ryan. Yeah. The third cheese was Haystack Sunlight. It's a Colorado cheese. It was a washed rind goat. 60 days of age on it. This Rogue Oregon Blue is 90 days. And the Tillamook that we did second was 3 years aging. And so the aging, the more age, the more hop bitterness or roast bitterness you can do, the more body as well. It concentrates flavors, makes it drier. Right. Cool. Thank you very much, everybody. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, it's okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. Those are Black Mission figs that were port glazed. We got them. Kyle gets them locally, and I think he got those for West Virginia. But yeah, port glazed, so. Again, that Reverend is bringing the pork glaze figs right into it as much as anything else. So, all right, thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks. Let's give a big round of applause to Greg Engert of Birch and Barley, the Neighborhood Restaurant Group. To the assistants from the Culinary Arts Program at Johnson & Wales, our AV artists, and you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming here. Enjoy your evening. And remember, the podcasts for these presentations are available at craftbeer.com. Go there for everything and anything you want to know about craft beer. Thank you. Good night.